This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
In 1997, 6 years after the first website in the world went live, anti-poverty advocates gathered in Vancouver to figure out how to make this new world of the internet accessible to all, regardless of income. PovNet was created out of that meeting, and it's been connecting activists and organizers ever since. Penny Goldsmith has worked in the anti-poverty community for over 35 years. She was executive coordinator of PovNet for 18 years until last summer. Since then, she's been working on a graphic book that tells the story of PovNet. The book is called Storming the Digital Divide, and it's been published by Lazara Press. It contains illustrations by Kara Sievright with additional art by Nicole Mary Burton. And Penny Goldsmith joins me in the studio this morning. Hello, Penny.
Hi.
Now, why did you decide to tell the PovNet story in a graphic format?
Well, I actually didn't. It started off as a workbook about organizing online. I was given a fellowship by a small adult education foundation for a year, and started interviewing advocates with a bit of a different hat on. What happened was that Kara came down with me to Carnegie one day, and I was interviewing Jean Swanson and Wendy Pedersen. And at the end of the interview, she said, "I'd like to draw that." And I said, "Sure, why not?" She did, and it was the beginning of the graphic story. The first sort of iteration of the workbook was something that a combination of essays that I had written that I thought were very sort of interesting and intelligent about PovNet, and then some of the stories. So I gave this sort of manuscript around to various people, and I noticed that they went right for the pictures, completely ignored my, you know, terribly interesting articles. So I thought, okay. So it morphed into a graphic story from there. And it's accessible, and people like it, and it tells a story in a way that's very real.
Yes, it certainly, you know, you want to crack open a graphic book, right? You say, oh, what's this? It's not so... it's just easier to access. When you go back to that first meeting in 1997, when you think back to that meeting, which of course you were at, why did people feel that there was a need for a tool like PovNet?
I think that the internet had started surfacing. People had started hearing about it. Advocates, anti-poverty advocates in British Columbia had been working for many years all over the province with not a whole lot of connection with each other. It cost money to make long-distance phone calls, faxes at the time, that kind of thing. And so people wanted to explore the idea of possibly having access to this thing.
What you did in those early years of PovNet is actually you did a lot of face-to-face stuff. Tell me about that.
PovNet is very much about people. I know that sounds weird. I spend a lot of time when I'm talking about PovNet talking about the importance of talking to people, because the internet and using the technology is really, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it really is a tool. It's not how people sort of learn from each other. So I spent the first couple of years of PovNet traveling around BC showing people how to turn computers on. I mean, these were advocates who had been doing the work for years, who were very experienced, and once they saw me and they knew who I was, they could call me up and say, "Where's the power button? I kind of forgot," you know, because they knew there was a person attached to this. It wasn't just a question of, you know, computers and tech talk, and people were scared of it. I mean, I was involved with teaching secretaries when the computers first started coming into an organization I worked for. And these were secretaries who've been doing the work for years and years, and they were scared of losing their jobs because of this thing. And so we played solitaire. You know, that's how people learned how to use the mouse.
You had two rules about computers.
Two rules about PovNet, yes. One is that it's always the computer's fault, and the other one is that there's no stupid questions.
I love that. Let's talk a little bit about the digital divide, because the book is called Storming the Digital Divide. And that must mean something quite different now than it did in the early years of the internet. How does it affect people now in 2016 if they don't have online access?
A lot. If you want to apply for welfare, for example, you have to fill out an online form that's, you know, 91 questions, and you have to be able to do it. If you want to apply for EI, any government services now is you have to apply online. But it's also the way people are communicating. You know, if you don't have that internet access, it's very difficult. I think storming the digital divide is different now than it was, but really the premise of it is the same, which is that internet access is, it's a human right. It's something that people really need to have in order to live their lives.
Well, what do people do if they need to apply for welfare and they don't have their own computer?
They go to the library. They go to one of the ApoNet advocates, and you know, and that's not really their job. But they can't go to the welfare office and do it. There's no help there. Those advocates end up doing what is a government service quite often in order to apply for that welfare.
And that, I guess, brings up privacy issues then.
Absolutely.
For those people?
In the library it does. I mean, you know, you're sort of sitting there, people are looking over your shoulder. Even if you get a wonderful librarian to help you, you know, it's public. It's not, you know, you don't necessarily want everyone to know that you're applying for welfare.
What kind of resources can people access through PovNet?
Advocates have a network with each other around the province via PovNet. They have email lists where they talk to each other about casework. And also what these discussions online do is they also precipitate they can identify systemic problems in the welfare system as well. So over the years, for example, PovNet has had a closed email list for advocates who are dealing with welfare issues around the province. And it's really practical stuff. You know, so for example, somebody in Fort St. John will post a message saying they've got a hearing and, you know, a section blah, blah, blah of the Employment and Standards Act. Somebody in Nanaimo will say, oh, I did that last week. You know, I'll send you a copy. So really practical stuff like that. But as a result of that, what also will happen is that people will start talking about some of the problems in the welfare ministry. And that has precipitated complaints to the Ombuds Office, which have instigated change. So right now, the most current thing is about call time. I'm waiting on the phone to get through, to be able to get, because there's no, you don't have your own worker anymore. You know, you're dealing with a system. And so people are having to wait for a really long time. Advocates are having to wait for a really long time. So as people are talking to each other, they can then do something about it, you know.
So there's layers and layers mm-hmm. of PovNet, because I went on and I'm not
yes.
on a private email list and I see, okay, find an advocate.
That's right. Yeah, you're a member of the public and you can go to the website and you can find all sorts of information about finding an advocate in your community and also current news, jobs, that sort of thing on the public website for sure. And we have a Twitter feed and Facebook, and those are also places where stories about poverty issues surface.
And you had something called PovNet U, or is that still running?
PovNet U is also a resource for advocates, and it's where you can take online courses about different areas of law, because especially in rural communities, those resources are not available. We live in Vancouver and we sort of see ourselves having access to a lot of this stuff, not enough, but, you know, a lot of it. But if you live in, you know, a rural community, you don't have access to that training. So education and training. I always say education and training because someone told me once that poor people get trained, everyone else gets educated.
Now, one of the parts of the book that I really enjoyed was the stories from the advocates that you talked to in rural BC. Mm-hmm. Tell us how Anne Fletcher from Bella Coola came to use PovNet in her work.
Well, Anne she moved to Bella Coola from the States 18 or 19 years ago now, and she had studied law in the States. I don't know if she was actually a practicing lawyer, but she studied law in the States, and she got to Bella Coola and she felt like she'd got home. But she realized right away that what was needed was some kind of a legal advocacy program, and it wasn't there. There had been no legal advocacy in the community ever. And she says, I wanted to start a legal advocacy program because I would see all these people trying to deal with legal type questions. And, you know, the picture in the graphic is about people sitting in a coffee shop, you know, and they're saying information that's not true, but someone told them, you know, so someone in the community who was well-meaning, you know, gave them completely wrong information. So over the course of time, she actually she ended up getting funding from the Law Foundation, who funds a lot of the anti-poverty groups in British Columbia, and she started the program. And you know, she said she has one story where she helps an elder get EI appeal an EI decision, and it's the first time anyone had ever appealed an EI decision in Bella Coola. She's now working also in Bella Bella. She travels, you know, big distances up there to do the work. I've been there. I've visited, and it's very impressive. I mean, it's a very impressive. She's been adopted by the Nuhalk band up there, and she's a member, very much a member of the community.
We can get so Vancouver-centric, people who live in Vancouver and not think and think, oh, you just go to the public library, and not think about the fact that there are people who are working to try and help people who don't have the information that they need.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And Anne is and one of many advocates who is very much a big part of that. And she uses, you know, PubMed all the time. She talks in her story in the book about that. She talks about you know, asking a question on the welfare list and getting an answer right away and needing it. And even when we were doing the book, actually, it was funny because we were asking a question about one of the pictures, and she said, Cara, I think, called her and said, you know, can you tell me about this one question? I can't remember what it was. And she said, oh, yes, well, I have an elder in the office right now. I will ask him, and got the information about which picture to use in the book. So.
Oh, great. Now, Vancouver Community Network started in 1993, and it has an important place in the story. Tell me about its role.
Yeah, Vancouver Community Network used to be the Freenet, and the Freenet was one of the, and there were Freenets all over. There were 60 of them. Initially, all over the country, and Vancouver Community Network was one of them. Brian Campbell was its founder, and Peter Royce I worked with for many years, working on access to information and access to the technology. And the Freenet was and VCN now hosts PopNet and has done so for a long, long time.
I remember in the station on Columbia Street, we had one of those computers. What were they called? Community Access Program,
which has been cut, federal government program, which has been cut. And it was, there were computers in people's in libraries, public libraries. There were computers everywhere. And yeah, that's a big program that's been cut. I was in Antigonish actually recently, and the public library there, which is a wonderful library, it's called the People's Library, I think. And they had a cap site still, and I said, well, wait a minute, it's been cut. They said, yeah, we'll just wait until the computers die. At which point they're not available anymore to people.
So the project of storming the digital divide goes on then.
Absolutely, and will continue to. And it's got to do not just with, there are community groups and anti-poverty groups who are petitioning the CRTC for free internet access or minimal internet access costs, like $10 a month or something like that, because people are paying for their internet and not paying for food and groceries now. I mean, this is some of these.
Yes, I read that in your book.
Yeah, and that's really scary. I mean, that's really sort of, you know, quite horrible.
But it just shows how important it is.
Yes, indeed. But I think that it's not just a question of getting the internet access. It's also a question of knowing how to use it and having and making sure that the, you know, government bodies and, you know, people who are insisting that everyone use it be aware of the fact that it's not, you know, universal, it's not accessible to everyone.
Well, it's a great book, and now you can say you're a comic book author.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Penny.
Okay, thank you.
I've been speaking with Penny Goldsmith. She's co-author of Storming the Digital Divide, The PovNet Story. The Vancouver launch of the book is taking place this coming Monday, October 17th, and it's at Our Town Cafe, which is on 245 East Broadway, that's at Kingsway, and it starts at 7 p.m.